Hopefully this works. I think it sounds like it does. Let me preach it from down here. I hope you don't mind. Thanks for the reading, Georgie. We read from 1 Corinthians 12, verses 20 through 26, really talking about the body, the members of the body. Good illustration, I think. Because we all have bodies. We all generally know how our bodies work. We all have an idea about, you know, okay, this is how this part of my body works, this is how this part of my body works, and we are pretty much in control of our bodies for the most part, except for those rare excursions, I guess. But I want you to imagine your body, I guess, and you imagine, for example, let's say something happens to your body. Let's say you cut your hand or something like that, right? You cut your hand. Your brain recognized, I cut my hand. My hand is injured. Your other hand may, your feet may run to the bathroom. Your other hand may open the cabinet. You may grab out some Neosporin. May slap a bandage on that guy, wash it, or whatever you do, right? It all works pretty well together. You know, all the body parts, they, in conjunction with what they're supposed to do. And you say, man, this body is pretty effective. It does what it's supposed to do. I want you to imagine if your body, instead of having one brain, had a lot of brains, where each part of your body had its own brain. Your hand has a brain, your heart has a brain, your feet have a brain, everything's got a brain. And I want you to imagine the same situation. You cut your hand. Well, the right hand looks over at the left hand and says, man, that stinks. Sorry for you, buddy. The heart says, man, I've been pumping blood. It's just squirting out of the hand now. Might as well just stop for a while. Your feet say, man, I've been standing up all day long. I ain't doing nothing. Forget it. We're over. Your left hand is going to be in a whole lot of trouble, isn't it? When you look at the body, you look at the church, it's a lot like that, where you have all of these parts, all of these members. And it's not, well, it's designed that there's one head, right? One brain, that is Christ, directing the members. But in reality, what is it? We have one brain directing the members, but each member really has to decide for itself, what is it going to do? Is it going to act, or is it going to do nothing? Or is it going to do something completely different than what is needed for the whole body? Today we're going to talk about personal responsibility. And it's something I think that is often difficult for us to think about, because what is personal responsibility? It means I got to do something. It means I have obligations. It means I have opportunities. I have things that I need to do. What? A lot of the times, they're not a lot of fun. So we're going to talk about today this whole idea of taking personal responsibility. We're going to talk about the idea that each one of us is a member of that body. We all have minds, we all have brains, we all have desires, wills. But we need to remember that we have a responsibility, a personal responsibility to the body of Christ, of course, but to one another, to God, to each other. I want to kind of go through this and kind of present this looking at a Bible story. I think it's really easy or easier to look at a Bible story and see some of these lessons because we can see other people. We can see there what they did. We can see what they didn't do. And then we can make applications. So let's turn to 1 Samuel 17. In 1 Samuel chapter 17 is the story of what we commonly call David and Goliath. I have a wonderful illustration courtesy of Google.com. Thank you. Or wherever it came from. Of course, I think most of us are familiar with the story of David and Goliath. And when I think of the story of David and Goliath, you know, obviously there's the battle between David and Goliath. But there is another player in the story that often gets overlooked, and that is Saul. So as we look through this story, and I'm going to step through it very briefly, so that just so we kind of have an idea, and then we'll get into some of the things. As we look at this story, I want us to notice not only what David does, but I want you to compare that with what does Saul do. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, we have, of course, and the Israelites, they're gathered together, and there's going to be a battle, as there often is, between the Philistines and the Israelites, right? And have this battle, and the Philistines send out their champion. This guy who's like, what, 9 feet tall and 9'6" or something ridiculous, right? Enormous guy. He's got all kind of armor, all kind of weapons. You wouldn't want to meet this guy in the middle of daylight, let alone in an alley. Because this guy would probably take you out quick, right? This guy is scary. He is bigger than anything I can even imagine. I don't even think there is any 9 feet tall people today. So the Philistines send out this guy, Goliath. He's enormous. And they say, you know, you guys sent out your champion. We sent out our champion. Whoever wins or whoever loses gets slaves of the other people, right? So, of course, what happens? Verse 11, when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed, greatly afraid. Well, naturally, I think we all be pretty afraid, right? So everybody's terrified about this Philistine. And he comes out day and night and day and night and makes this challenge to the Israelites. And day and night and day and night, nothing happens. Well, eventually David comes out and he's bringing some food to his brothers and whatnot. And while he's out there, he sees the Philistine. He sees Goliath. And he hears what Goliath is saying. And he says, wait, what's going on here? This is ridiculous. And he's taken to Saul. And remember, Saul, what does he do? He says, hey, David, who, you know, is a young guy this time. He says, hey, David, here, let me give you my armor. Let me give you my shield. Let me give you my sword and all this. And I'm kind of imagining, if you can, like a young person, you know, small like me, wearing armor for, you know, somebody like Wes. I don't think that would work out too good. It would look kind of ridiculous. Well, David's saying this isn't going to work for me. What does he do? He goes out with his sling. He goes out with his 5 stones. Goes out, kills Goliath. That's the end of the story. You know, Israelites are victorious, right? When I look at this story, and maybe you do the same. When I do this story, I look at Saul and I ask myself, Saul, what happened here? And I look at Dave and I say, man, that is a guy who really did take personal responsibility. So today I want to talk about 3 main things that have to do with personal responsibility. Taking personal responsibility. The first one is recognizing our opportunities, recognizing our roles, recognizing our obligations. When you look at this story, you can see some of what I'm talking about. Before I get into that, though, I want to tell you kind of a little story or an illustration, whatever you want to call it. How many times have you guys driven down the road and you've seen something that, you know, just is really messed up? You know, you see there's a bunch of potholes, right? Oh, man, look at all these potholes in the road. Or, you know, you look over on by the guardrail and look, there's garbage. You know, people just throwing all their cans out there and all this kind of stuff. Or maybe you come into the church building, right, and you see, man, you know, thinking somebody left all their garbage all over the pew, or, man, you know, oh, my books, all the books are all messed up, and all this kind of stuff, right? I don't know about you, but one of the first things that I hear people say, and I hear myself often say, is, man, you know what? They should take care of that. You know what? Oh, man, look at all this mess. They should clean that. I got to tell you something. That person, they, is the most busy person, has the most responsibility of anybody I've ever known. Because when you think about it, how often do we say, you know what? They should do that. They should do something about that. They should really handle that situation. I bet a lot. And you probably don't even realize it. I sometimes catch myself, I'll be walking around and I'll say, man, you know, they really need to do something about this. And I'm like, oh, said it again. When you look at this story, when you think about David and Goliath, and you think about David and Saul, I mean, put yourself in the position of one of those guys, one of those Israelites. And you see, man, there's that big guy out there. And I'm sitting in, let's say you're one of the soldiers sitting in your tent, right? Maybe you had that same attitude. Man, they should really do something about this. That guy out there, he's making a big stink. They should take care of that situation. Let me ask you a question. Who do you think should be the one that should have taken care of that situation? I'll give you a hint. His name starts with an S. Here's a question for you. why didn't Saul take care of this? Or why was it Saul's obligation? Let's ask it that way. If we go back to 1 Samuel chapter 9, we learn a little bit about Saul, right? Let's start in verse 1. It says, "Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Bechoroth, son of Aphia, the son of a Benjamite, a mighty man of valor. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and a handsome man. There was not a more handsome person than he among the sons of Israel, and from his shoulders and up, he was taller than any of the people." We've got a guy who is the king of Israel, who is the leader, who is the one who is people are looking to for direction. He is the biggest guy. He is the son of a mighty warrior. If you were to take kind of an objective look at the situation, it's pretty hard to say anything but, you know what? Saul's the guy. And guess what? Saul what? But when Saul looked at the situation, what did he do? Well, when you look down in verse 16, back in 1 Samuel 17, what did Saul do? Well, for at least 40 days and 40 nights, he didn't really do a lot, did he? Kind of just sat around. Didn't take advantage, or didn't take the challenge, didn't take the obligation that he had. But instead, we have David. David sees the problem. David hears the problem. David takes action. David does something about it. That's kind of what we need to keep in mind. We all have goals. We all have opportunities. Like David. David had an opportunity. And just the same, David could have been like, man, you know what? They should take care of this. You know, Saul better get out there or do something. Or somebody else better do something. We all have opportunity. We all have responsibility. We all have obligation. And as we look around, we're going to see those things. And you know what's important? It's important that we recognize that we have that responsibility to do what we're supposed to do. And guess what? It's not always an easy thing to do. It reminded me of a story over in Luke chapter 10, the story of the Good Samaritan. And you could turn there if you want. But I think we know the story pretty well. Guy's on a journey, gets beat up, gets robbed. What happens? Priest comes by. Priest sees the situation. What does he do? Goes by on the other side of the road. Did he have an opportunity? Absolutely he had an opportunity. But did he take it? Absolutely not. What comes next? The Levite comes and looks and says, I don't know what he said, if anything, but he passed by on the other side of the road too. And then finally the Samaritan comes and he takes care of him. Those two guys, the priest and the Levite, they had a responsibility. After all, they were servants of the Lord in the temple. And yet they did not take the opportunity. They did not fulfill their responsibility to this guy. And that's something that we need to be thoughtful of. That we need to recognize our opportunities, recognize our obligations, and fulfill them. I don't know what the priest and the Levite thought. Maybe they thought that somebody else should take care of it. But they didn't do what they were supposed to do. So let's move on then. I want to tell you another story. This was about when I was younger. Well, probably a little bit still today, but mostly, let's just say it was more when I was younger. How many times did my mom tell me, you need to clean the basement? The basement is disgusting. You need to clean it up. And usually that would be about a week after we had already cleaned the basement. So you can tell about how fast it got to a bad spot. Well, she's planning to say, clean the basement. And we'd be like, I don't really want to do it. I'll do it later. You know, it would probably happen for like a month. By the end of the month, how do you think the basement looked? Well, it was probably like a foot deep toys. And I don't know if you could see the floor anymore. It was all kind of a mess, right? Thing that I want to talk about as far as personal responsibility is that we need to make sure that we do not procrastinate. We know what our responsibilities are. And how often do we decide, I'll do that another time. I'll do that a different way. I'll do that, another time or whatever. I don't really feel like doing it right now. And we just procrastinate and procrastinate and procrastinate. And what ultimately happens? By the time we actually do it, if we do it, it's probably a lot harder than when we first started. When we look at the story of David and Goliath and Saul and all these guys, Saul sat in his tent, you know, didn't do anything, didn't take the challenge for 40 days. What happens when we just sit on something for a long period of time? I don't know about you, but let me tell you what happened for me. The first day I know my responsibility, and I say to myself, man, I don't really want to do that. And I say, you know what, I'll do that tomorrow. Day two comes. What happens? I don't really want to do that. And you know what? It's a whole lot easier for me to do it again. Just procrastinate, procrastinate, procrastinate. You know what else happens to me? I tend to think about it a lot more. And I tend to think about, man, that's going to be so rough. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to clean that. I don't want to have to do my part in this. I don't want to get involved in that. And I tell myself all these reasons about why I shouldn't do it. And eventually I just convince myself, right? When we procrastinate, we're really putting ourselves in a bad spot. We're making it a lot harder for us to do our personal responsibility. Reminds me, as I said, the longer we wait, the harder it gets. And we see Goliath waited an awfully long time, at least 40 days, as I mentioned. And yet David immediately did what he was supposed to do. It reminds me of James chapter 4. Let's turn there. If you look in verse 13, it says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, you will go to such and such a city and spend a year there, engage in business and make a profit. Yet, you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you are boasting your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. I want you to notice this, verse 7. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. I look at myself, I look at Saul, and a lot of times I see myself doing some of these same things. I see myself not doing what I need to do and procrastinating. I see Saul not doing what he needed to do and procrastinating. I think we all have been in that spot. We're failing to take our personal responsibility and we just let it go and let it go and let it go. God says to him who knows the right thing to do, does not do it, to him it is sin. That's pretty strong language. I don't know if we've ever thought about that in that way. Something that we need to think about when we're considering our personal responsibility and taking that personal responsibility, we need to recognize that it's something that we need to do now. It's not something that we can put off and say, oh, later in life I'll do this, or you know, later this week I'll do this, or whatever. Our responsibility is today. It's for now. And we need to think about that. The last thing I want to leave you with here is another idea. And I think about back to the Good Samaritans. I want you to put yourself in the position of the priest or the Levite. You know, as you're riding your donkey or whatever it was down the road, right? And you know, you're in your priestly garment and doing your thing. And man, you see this busted up guy on the side of the road. Can you think of a reason not to stop? I can think of a few reasons. Man, I got my priestly garment on, a bloody, you know, we don't have tide back in the day. So if I get some blood on me, I'm going to have to get, it's going to be a mess. Man, I'm really old. I can't really do anything for this guy. You know, I can't lift him up or anything. Don't forget this. Man, maybe there's some other robbers around here. If I stop, they'll probably just take my stuff too. So, you know, thanks for that guy, but oh well. We'll move on. You can think of a lot of reasons, I think, right? Not to stop. And you know what ultimately happens when we do that? When we make these excuses? We eventually convince ourselves, you know what? I'm not even going to do this. Forget this thing. And we convince ourselves not only that we don't have to do it, But maybe even that it's right for us not to do it. Sometimes we convince ourselves of that, this whole, you know, self-delusion. We're really good at justifying ourselves, aren't we? But one of the things that we have to do if we're going to take our personal responsibility is stop making excuses. Stop telling ourselves reasons we can't. Stop thinking that, I'm too busy or all this. Responsibility. Stop making excuses about it. When you look at Saul in this situation in 1 Samuel chapter 17, you know, there's not really a good explanation for why Saul didn't fight Goliath. I mean, I guess you could go and say, verse 11, he was afraid. But I'm not sure that was the total reason. Maybe it was. I mean, I could be totally wrong about that. But when I look at Saul, I see some other things that he tried to do as far as make excuses why it was okay for him not to go into battle. When you notice David, when he arrives on the scene in verse 26, he says, let's back up. Verse 4, when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in accord with this word, saying, thus it will be done for the man who kills him. So Saul's afraid. Apparently, Saul's got this bounty out for the guy. And he's saying, well, you know, if somebody else kills him, I'll give you some money and, you know, all this, such and such. Later on, when David comes to Saul and says, hey, I want to go fight him. Saul says, okay, well, you know what? At least take my armor, okay? Like that was supposed to do something. And I'm not trying to put anything against Saul in this, more than what the Bible itself gives. But I think when we look at these things, or at least when I look at these things, I see a guy who doesn't want to take on his personal responsibility, doesn't want to do what he's supposed to do, and he's pretty much trying to figure out some other way that it can be done that doesn't involve him. Oh, maybe I'll pay somebody to do it. Maybe I'll just give him my armor. Maybe I'll give him my sword. And maybe that will kind of make me not have to do this. Case, is it? Saul's making these excuses, it seems like to me, like I said. And on the other hand, David is certainly not. David is a guy who could have made a million excuses. He's not been into, you know, battle school, or he's not a soldier. He's young. He's never fought anybody like this before. Yeah, he's fought a lion and a bear, but I mean, come on. A lion and a bear is not a 9-foot-tall guy with a sword and a javelin and all other kind of stuff. David had all those excuses in his back pocket, and I think anybody that heard David make those excuses would have been like, yeah, right, David, you're right. You know, you should not be out in battle against that guy. But David didn't make excuses. David saw an opportunity. David saw a responsibility that he had to defend God. And he went out and did what he was supposed to do. You know, there's a lot of excuses that we can make, too. We could talk about, you know what, that's not really my job. I don't really do that. Or, you know, that other person, he would be a lot better to do that than me. You know, talk to that guy. He would be much better. Or we say things like, well, you know, that guy over there, he's not doing anything. If he's not doing anything, I'm not going to do anything either. And we make all these excuses and try to justify ourselves when we don't take our personal responsibility. I want to remind you of a story in Nehemiah chapter 3. And if you remember, this is when the Jews are returning to their land, who are now called Jews, returning to their land, and they're rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem. And in chapter 3, I mean, you look at this, or at least I do, I look at this list, and it's all these different people that are rebuilding the wall, and it tells, oh, this guy's building the sheep gate, and this one's building the cow gate, and all these other things, right? And you read through this, and it almost kind of reminds you of like a genealogy, because you're reading this, and like, man, this is super boring. What's the point? When I read chapter 3 in Nehemiah, what I see is people taking personal responsibility. It's not just the biggest, strongest guys that are building this wall. It's everybody. And you know what? When people aren't involved in building it, people step in and take over and make sure that that wall gets built. I want to just highlight for you a couple of passages. I want you to notice verse 4. And again, this is kind of in the context of all these different people are building all these different places. In verse 4, next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakaz, made repairs. Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel, I did this to myself, made repairs. And next to him, Zadok, the son of Bana, also made repairs. Look at this, verse 5. Moreover, next to him, the Tekoites made repairs. But their nobles did not support the work of their masters. So you got some guys building, but you know, in the face of other people are not helping them. They didn't make an excuse. They still built. You drop down a little bit. Let's look at verse number 7. Next to them, Melatiah the Gibeonite and Jadon the Merahite, the Gibeon of Mizpah, also made repairs for the official seat of the governor of the province beyond the river. And next to him, Uziel, the son of Harahiah, of the goldsmith, made repairs. And next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs. They restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. I have a question for you. What do you think a perfumer knows about mortar? I would say probably not a lot. Do you think a goldsmith knows how to build a wall that should stand against attack? Not really, right? But yet, what are these guys doing? Are they making excuses? Hey, you know what? I know how to make some fine perfumes, so I can't really take care of that wall. No. These guys are out there. These guys are on that wall. They're helping. They're taking personal responsibility, doing what they're supposed to do. Go down to verse 12. Next to him, Shalom, the son of Halahesh, the official of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs. Who? He and his daughters. You know, these girls could have been like, you know what? These men are much stronger than I am. Forget this. Let the men do that. That's a man's work. You know what? They recognize this is something that needs to be done. And I contribute. And what did they do? They took responsibility and they did it. I mean, you can go through chapter 3. I'm not going to go through any more of that. But it's filled with people that are taking personal responsibility, not making excuses, and doing what needs to be done. I'll just tell you excuses that I either make or have heard people make, things of that nature. I've told you a couple. People say, I'm too busy. Can't do it. I'm just going to make you a challenge when it comes to I'm too busy. I want you to really look at how you spend your time. How much time do you watch TV? How much time do you play games on your phone? How much time are you on Facebook? How much time are you doing all these things that, guess what? They're a waste of time. I hate to tell us. We spend so much time and we feel like we are so, so busy. But at the same time, we fail to notice that we're not using the time that we have in any kind of productive manner. We need to take responsibility for what we are doing and make the right choices. Stop making excuses. The distractions that are around us, the like I said, the TV, the entertainment, all these kinds of things. Let's stop making excuses. Let's do what we need to do. So, kind of wrap us up here. You know, we talked about personal responsibility. We talked about what we need to do. Things that we can do to help us with our personal responsibility. As I mentioned to you, the first one, recognize our role. Recognize our opportunities. Look around. Take initiative. Look and see what around you needs to be done. And recognize that, guess what? We have the ability and we have the opportunity. Let's do it. Saul didn't recognize it, and he failed. Let's be like David. See an opportunity. Take it. Fulfill our responsibility. Second, we need to stop waiting around. Stop procrastinating. Stop waiting till tomorrow to do what you know needs to be done right now. And finally, stop making excuses. Stop telling yourself reasons that you can't do it when we should be telling ourselves all the reasons that we should be doing it. Take your personal responsibility. Do what needs to be done. Now, I go back to my original illustration. You know, you think about the body, right? And it has this mind and it controls everything. And when you have this one mind that controls, something, everything seems to work out really well. It's only when you start giving minds to every little other part that it starts to kind of break down a little bit. And as I mentioned, the price is very similar to that. You've got Christ, who's in control. He is the head. And you've got all these members that, you know, have their own little agendas or desires and all this kind of thing. We need to have our minds as the mind of Christ. We need to think about, what would Christ want me to do? What does the body of Christ need? How can I fulfill my purpose? How can I fulfill my responsibility? We need to take on our personal responsibility. We need to do what Christ would want of us. And that's so tough. It's tough because most of the time it's uncomfortable. It's undesirable. It's not what we want to do. But we need to do as Christ said. Not as I will, but as you will. We need to make our wills in parallel with that of God. Close out with 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Why is this important? For we know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For indeed in this house we groan, longing to be clothed with our dwelling from heaven, much as we, having put it on, will not be found naked. For indeed, while we are in this tent, we groan, being burdened, because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed, so that what is mortal will be swallowed up by life. Now he who prepared us for this very purpose is God, who gave to us the Spirit as a pledge. Therefore, being always of good courage, and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. We are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be home with the Lord. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to Him. Because notice this, verse 10. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. What are you doing in your body for the body? I think that question we can dwell on and think about, and it should help us, hopefully, to recognize our personal responsibility and to fulfill it. Today, if there's any among us that are struggling, those are the body. Whether it's physical things or spiritual things, there are those around us that are here for you. And if there is something that we can do to help you with whatever challenges that you may be facing, if you need prayers or if you've sinned or whatever it is that you need, we are here for you. And if you're not in the body, and while we don't have a baptistry here, I'm sure we can find some water. If you're here and you're not part of the body and you know that you should be part of the body, come forward too. Whatever your need is, you can come forward and we'll help you out with that as we stand and as we sing.